hey, bitch, what's up, bitch? Suck my dick, bitch.
Oh, my God. You were, like, gearing up for that one.
I've had that saved for a few weeks.
Thank you.
I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I just went, like, hey, bitch, what's up, bitch? Suck my dick, bitch. Do you remember that video?
No.
You don't remember seeing that video?
No. You honestly were kind of giving me, like, Amy vibes from, like, Thousand Pound Sisters.
No,
that's
kind
of what, no. I'm uncultured.
There's this Vine, and it's I don't, it wasn't Vine,
I
right?
I got into a Vine, the Vine phase.
It's like old. Well, now I just feel like that came off very aggressive. But there's this Vine of this girl. And she's like banging on the car door of like on the window.
Wait. Yes,
and she's like, let me talk to you.
Yes,
and he's like, get away from my car. And then she like punches the window, and then he's like, I'm recording you. And she's like, hey, bitch, what's up, bitch? Suck my dick, bitch.
I think I have, but it's just like a distant memory at this point.
I'll have to show it to you. If I can get the audio, I'll like insert it so that way people don't think that I'm like yelling
just
at them.
Just being a fucking jerk.
But anyways, on that note, welcome back.
Yeah. Were we consistent? No.
No,
we
not. Missed a week.
Yeah, we did.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
You know.
You might probably miss another one.
Honestly,
be glad that we actually even upload. But honestly, we've been doing good. There's a lot more of you than when we started, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so thank you to everybody who takes the time to listen to us.
Yeah, and even tell your friends about us. Maybe, I don't know.
If you did, thank you.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, it's like my dick, bitch.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, for the sake of time, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
Am I first or you first?
You're first this week.
Ooh, okay. So I kind of saw this story. I was excited to it because among a lot of things that I do every day is like everybody else scroll through TikTok. And I saw this girl mention this story and I was like, oh, you know, like I save a lot of those because I'm like, oh, some of them I haven't heard.
Yeah.
And some of them are just like, I feel like TikToks obviously are supposed to get like your attention and supposed to get you hooked, but then they never really. So I finally went through with one of these TikTok stories that I saw, and I wish I would have remembered the creator who gave me this idea.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there and you happen to see this and this was you, thank you. And thank I will, you know.
For your service.
Yeah. If I find her username, I'll post it in the description. But so imagine early 90s,
okay.
A time where I feel like social media has just, and news is kind of like TV. Like, you know, how like I feel like it's barely, when was the internet invented? I don't know.
I feel like 80s, right?
Right.
Like where you were able to like take a computer home. You
right.
know?
Like a fucking, those cubicle computers.
Yeah. Like the really big ones that were like the size of TVs.
Yeah. So like I feel like murders back then and crazy, like unless it was like serial killer, like, you know what I mean? Like you never heard of like
huge.
The small town like murders and like the disappearances of just every day and that it could happen like literally anywhere. I feel like back then, people believed if I was in a small town, it's safe. And I mean, people now even days even think it like that. Like, you know, depending on where you live and the size, like makes a huge like
for sure
difference. And
yeah.
So this brings us to Florida in the 90s, where mom and dad, Steve and Shayla, were raising their little girl, Maddie Clifton.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring a bell, Maddie Clifton?
It does sound familiar.
It does? Okay.
But I'm not entirely sure what the story is.
So Maddie was able to go play outside, like many like little kids in that time. It was like very little supervision. Because, I mean, what's going to happen to a little girl playing by herself?
You know, hundreds of things.
So, back then, it wasn't as common, obviously, so they didn't, like, this was just an average day for them. It's something that is in the routine for Maddie to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And on November 3rd, 1998, Maddie goes outside to play like any other day, but unlike any other day, she does not return home.
Mm.
Maddie's mom starts to worry, obviously, because she hasn't returned home, and around 5 p.m., Shayla decides to call the police and report her daughter missing. So often we hear about these children related stories and kind of think twice because police usually have a bad record of just like how they go about, you know, when parents call them in, they're just like, oh, well, they probably just ran away, you know? And, but police, this actually caught like fire through all the tabloids, you know, all the magazines and newspaper stands, because obviously a little girl, from a little suburban family goes missing, everybody was like, oh my God, you know,
that gets people attention.
Yeah,
you know, because it's like, that could be my daughter, that could be my niece, my granddaughter, you know.
Yeah. So from November 4th, so the day after she disappeared, through the 9th, the Clifton family and Maddie's disappearance went viral. Many people, like all the neighborhoods, people that knew them, would go out and pass out flyers, and they combed through the neighborhood with police in order, in hopes to find a clue or, you know, Maddie. Mm-hmm. And across the street from Maddie lived the Phillips household, who was an active participant in the search for Maddie, because they lived in the same neighborhood. They were neighbors.
Yeah.
The family consisted of Josh Phillips. He was born in March 17th, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And then his mom and dad, Steve and Melissa. Mm-hmm. Steve, his dad, worked as a computer specialist. His father was was super strict and violent towards his wife and son, which, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his dad would Joshua's dad would get especially pissed when there was kids at their house without him. You know, when he was upset, like, you know, he would come home and get really pissed.
What dick.
Okay, so essentially his dad was just like a very angry person, kind of a dick. And he, especially when he had drinks, which was obviously pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's November 10th, and Maddie's parents had done a live interview in hopes to get their daughter back.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh's mother, Melissa, was cleaning his room when she noticed that his waterbed was leaking. Mm-hmm. And as she approaches the waterbed to see what was leaking, she does not find a hole or a rip. She discovers the body of Maddie Clifton.
Oh.
Her body was stuffed in a corner of the bed frame underneath the waterbed.
And how old was this little girl?
She was 8.
She was 8.
Mm-hmm.
And the little boy?
We'll go into that.
Okay.
So when police interrogate Josh, he would outline what happened the day that Maddie disappeared. So obviously, because she's literally in his fucking waterbed, they immediately go and arrest him. Josh is literally, I think in 9th grade, he's 14.
Okay,
and Maddie was 8. So he said that day he was playing in his, I believe in his front yard, playing baseball. And Maddie goes up to him and asks him to play.
Mm-hmm.
He was really hesitant because obviously his dad's a dick and he didn't want to get in trouble.
Right.
And he didn't want his dad to get angry. But he was just, his parents were actually away at the time. So he was like, whatever, I'll just play with Maddie. So whatever happens, and he accidentally hits Maddie with a baseball in the face.
Okay.
And Maddie, of course, just starts screaming. She's bawling.
Oh, yeah.
Well, literally a boy at 14 throws a ball and hits you in the face. Yeah. It's gonna hurt, right?
I got hit in the face with a baseball by a grown man one time.
Who?
It was like for my church. We went to Scotland.
Oh, and they do not like those real Christian retreats?
I shouldn't say what lake. But it was with my church group, and whenever my mom would like force me to go to church as a teenager. We were at a lake, and we were having like a whole like little barbecue and thing, and people were playing baseball, and they made me play because they can't just leave you fucking be. And there was this one guy, his name was Walter, and it didn't help that I really disliked Walter because he was very creepy to me.
Uh-huh.
And anyways, he hit the baseball and it like went boom, and it just hit me like right here in the center, like
Jesus Christ,
in between my eyes, like in my nose bridge, and it just hit me like boom, dude. And thankfully he hit it with one of those like those little plastic bats.
Oh yeah.
So it didn't have like a whole lot of like force behind it, because if it had been with like a wooden bat or like an aluminum bat, dude, that shit probably would have fucking killed me. But it was like with one of those plastic bats, because that's all they had. And it just like, I was just like, I just had like this big gash right here, and I was just like gushing blood, and I was like, ah! I was just crying, dude. And then like everybody was like, oh my gosh, Walter, why would you do that? Yeah. And like Walter was like humiliated the rest of the little trip, dude. And I just like, just like sniffling
to make things worse.
Yeah. I was like, like when you cry like that. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, guys, we have a little extra guest today. Our friend Jenny is...
Jenny69.
Oh, shit. I'm so good. I need some teeth. Fucking
no, just Jenny.
Just Jenny.
Yeah, so if you hear her in the back, she's making her comments. I was going to say, ignore that.
I was just like, don't ignore Jenny.
Don't ignore Jenny. Jenny has a lot of valuable information. She's a very intelligent woman.
She's our special guest today.
Yeah. She's the only college graduate in the room.
Period.
Snaps for Jenny.
All right. So as I continue with my story, so Josh explains that in his panic of Maddie screaming her head off and crying, and that his dad and mom would come home and see her and obviously be uber pissed. Dad, so what does this 14-year-old decide to do?
I don't know. He probably, like, fucking... I don't know. Did he, like, try to, like, smother her or something? Like, shut the fuck up.
So he decides that he's going to drag Maddie inside his home. Yeah. Where he then proceeds to strangle her and beat her with the baseball bat. Ooh, and this is... Fuck. He did this, he says, to quiet her down. He did all of that to just get her to shut up, basically. And I was just like, there's many different ways to approach that scenario, but strangling her and beating her with a bat was definitely not, you know...
Yeah.
The best option.
Yeah.
So Maddie, I'm sure, is at this point is just straight up unconscious, and he decides that he needs to get rid of her body. Before his parents got home, so that's when he decides to put her underneath his waterbed. Okay. So she, and there's like a picture you can Google that they use at the courts when they obviously, he was going to court, and it's like the bed frame, and she, her body was just like L-shaped in one corner. Just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when Maddie's mom reports her missing at 5 p.m. that first day that she obviously didn't come home, by the time she calls the cops and reports her missing, Josh had already taken a knife and slit Maddie's throat. Because he was scared that Maddie eventually kind of regained consciousness.
So she was alive.
And she was groaning from underneath the bed. So he wanted to silence her before his parents obviously found out that she was there. So it was kind of like in vain almost, because she was already dead before she even realized she was missing her mom.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's so sad.
Then there's like an article that I read, and I just could not find it, but they said that her body was also found naked from the waist down.
Okay.
Which obviously, you know,
implies
a sexual assault. But apparently there was no other signs of sexual assault, but it's just weird, you know?
Yeah,
that is. And obviously everybody in the whole town and police were really dumbfounded, because the police searched the Phillips home when she went missing. And there was a stench of obviously her rotting corpse, but they just chucked it up to be that they had birds in the house as pets. Okay, Jenny, you have birds.
That's stupid.
Right?
Like, does not smell like a decomposing body.
Like, even if you were nasty, like, birds, there's no way their poop smells like that. They eat fucking seeds, for crying out loud. Like, a rotting body.
Like, how many birds they got that they're thinking...
Also, people who, like, smell decomposing bodies usually, like...
They would know. It's
you can tell, at least from, like, other stories that I've heard.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just, like, because at this point when they searched the house, she was probably dead only, what, a few hours?
I'm not sure exactly of the timeline, but yeah, I mean, maybe.
Because they didn't find her, they found her body the following day, right?
So they found her body, let me look back here. November 10th. So, and she disappeared on November 4th.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that, it's a couple days. That is a substantial amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's. And she had, like, open wounds.
So maybe it was just one of those things of, like, we have nothing else that would lead us to believe that it was them. So it was just probably something that they didn't even think to really...
Like, I no see, I no smell.
Yeah. But I can't see, can't hurt me.
Yeah. So basically, like, everybody was shook, because people that knew Josh were like, why would he ever do that? Like, that's not something he would ever do. Mm-hmm. And so the case got uber popular, because once, like, even local enforcement couldn't figure out the case, FBI even got involved.
Yeah.
And it was so popular that the judge who was sentencing sentencing Josh had to move the trial over, like, what was it? I think halfway across the state to another county.
Wow.
In efforts to avoid that a biased jury. Mm-hmm. The trial began on July 6, 1999, and only lasted 2 days, where the grand jury only deliberated for over 2 hours before finding Josh Phillips guilty of first-degree murder. He was then moved from the juvenile detention center to the Duval County Jail, where he is held without bail to await trial.
And so then, they tried him as an adult?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yeah. And then in June 27, 2000... Steve Phillips, his dad, dies in a one-vehicle rollover, a county in a county near the prison where his son was waiting to be incarcerated. So his dad died. So at least there's that.
Ooh.
Well, and then
R.I.P. But you know, sir, but what's
really sweet is Maddie's mother consoles the boy's mother. And that's the first time they ever interact and talk to each other since the case, since the murder.
Yeah. So, I mean, they both lost a child in a way, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, like...
Well, Josh's mom loses her husband, which I don't think she cares very much, but then she lost her son and her husband at the same time. Yeah.
And he didn't have any siblings, it was just them.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, so she's, like, alone. And, I mean, ultimately, like, it's not her fault that her son did what he did, and I think that... That shows, like, a lot of character for Maddie's mom, you know, to be able to, like, put that aside and be like, you know, like, yeah, your son, you know, he took my child, but that's not...
You're a human.
Yeah, like, you're still a human being, and that's not on you. Because, you know, it would be really easy for her to have that resentment and to blame her.
Oh, yeah, easily. And then, so, August 26th rolls around, and the judge sentenced him to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Damn.
And he calls the teen monstrous. Like, he's just, like... No, he has no loopholes. There's no way of him, like, he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail.
Wow.
So in 2012, the Supreme Court finds that mandatory life sentences for juveniles were unconstitutional. Mm. So at that point, Josh became eligible for resentencing.
Oh.
Yeah. So that had, like, a whole rip tide of just throughout Maddie's family because they were really pissed.
Yeah.
So, Maddie's sister was terrified that he was gonna go free, and she was quoted as saying that her sister Maddie doesn't get a chance to walk on this earth again, so why should he? And obviously the judge that was resentencing Josh at the time felt the same way because he kept the original sentencing.
Damn.
So he got sentenced to life in prison twice. Yeah.
Damn, so he's no he chances like, left for him.
Like, literally imagine getting the chance to maybe get your sentence reduced or possibility at least of parole when you're, like, fucking 95 and the judge is like, no, that shit was so fucked up and vile that you're definitely staying in prison for the rest of your fucking life.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. I feel like, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about that sentencing. I don't know, because, you know, I don't know, like, I can never see things just as, like, black and white, you know?
Right.
And I always have trouble with that, because it's, like, how long do you punish this person who committed this? But that's the thing of it, too, is that, like, it's, like, okay, it's not like he just, like, stole a fucking bike or something.
Right.
Or, like, robbed a convenience store. Like,
right.
He literally killed a child.
Right.
But he was also a child, you know? Like, 14 years old, dude, like, I don't know, dude, a 14-year-old to me is a baby. Like, yeah, you mm-hmm. know... some things mm-hmm. you know better, you know right from wrong, but you're still, your fucking brain is developing, you as a human are still not even like formed yet, you
right.
know, like you're still fucking growing every day, you know, like physically, mentally, you know. So I don't know, like I guess I just, I don't want to say that I have beef with the sentencing, but I do have like questions as to whether like
Is that the right
way to punish this person who committed this crime when they were so young? And maybe now as an adult, you know, like, they have that mental capacity to realize, like, that was so fucked up of me. And again, like, I have to go back to thinking of, like, his father.
Right, because...
being very abusive to him. Because
you know both sides of the story. And that's the thing that gets you. But also, like, that's what a judge does, right? Like, they have to deliberate between, hey, he had a fucked up upbringing, but how fucked up can it be? That but, this is how you resort to handling,
yeah.
Like,
but then you also have to think of, I don't know, like I don't know, I don't really trust the government or the judicial system. So like, I have trouble believing that they're just like completely righteous and they're like, yes, this is the right choice. Because I don't know, a lot of it too could just be politics, you know, of like that they're like, oh well, if I let this motherfucker go, people are gonna be fucking pissed. They're gonna
and
be like, you killed a baby.
Because
judges are elected.
That's true, and that shit went fucking viral. So everybody and their dogs wanted this man in fucking jail, no matter what.
Did you have a thought, Jenny?
Just with what you said, I see where you're coming from, but you also have to realize with the abuse of childhood, there's other people who get abused as well.
Yeah,
and they're not committing those same crimes.
No, for sure.
Obviously.
Yeah. And I'm not justifying it like by saying like,
no.
Oh well, he's abused and that's
right.
and that but makes it okay. But I think for me it's just more so like everybody has different reactions to trauma. And I'm not saying that this is like a valid reaction to that trauma,
yeah.
but as a child who grew up in a very violent home, in a place where he knew that if he messed up in any capacity, he was going to get fucked up, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that it makes it okay, but I'm just saying that, like, it makes sense that he would have that knee-jerk reaction of, like, okay, this little girl's going to be a problem. She's going to cause me a lot of problems. Like, my dad's going to be fucking pissed.
Right.
I need to get rid of this.
Right.
But the way that he went about it. And, yeah, like, the fact like that. Like, the nuclear fucking option.
And here's the thing also. He could have backed out in several ways. Because for once sure. he dragged her into the home, could have been like, you know what? Oh, shit, my bad. Once he dragged her in the bed frame, oh, shit, my bad. Because she regained consciousness and was groaning. He could have been like, listen, our little secret, you know, let bygones be bygones. But then he stabs her and slits her throat.
Yeah.
And is just like...
And that's where it kind of loses that, like, okay, like, he took it to, like, extremes that were, like, beyond...
Right.
Beyond what was...
Necessary.
Necessary. Not that any of it was... Yeah, but just in the sense that, like, he went beyond what any, I think, any, like, person of sound mind would think to go, you know? And it's definitely, like, that's kind of where it falls apart for me, because I can sympathize with, like, this kid who made a mistake, who just, you know...
Freaked
the fuck out, you know, as a response to their trauma that they've been through, and they were just trying to figure out a way to make it go away, you know? Right,
exactly.
And, but again, like, where it falls apart for me is that, like, he went to all of these crazy extremes, measures, you know, to all of these crazy measures that ultimately, you know, resulted in a little girl losing her life, and it would have been as easy as him being, like...
He could have walked that little girl and be like, hey, I accidentally hit her in the face. Like as a parent, like, I don't have kids, but as a parent, I would have been like, okay, yeah, say sorry. Like, won't happen again. I know,
but, like, what are they going to do? They can't fucking kill you.
Yeah,
know,
like, they might hit you in the face with a baseball later, but, like, you know, like, you're not going to go to fucking jail.
You'll get in trouble, and I'm sure, but, like, I'm sure that whatever beating he would have gotten for it, from his father is lesser than the, you know, life what sentencing. He's dealing with now, you know, because now he has to pay for it for the rest of his life, and... I don't know. Like, again, I have sympathy just for, like, a little boy who was being abused, who reacted in a way that he thought, just out of fear, out of trauma, you know?
Mm-hmm. No sympathy to, like, a grown-ass man that committed murder.
But. No, but I have sympathy for that little boy.
Yeah.
But my sympathy kind of dissolves at the point where, like you said, he had so many opportunities to just say, you know, like, no, this is going too far. Like, I can't go through with this. But, like, he never...
Had that.
He never took any of those opportunities to just say, like, you know, because I feel like during that time, it was hours that she was there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He could have had a moment of clarity of, like, this is too far. I've gone too far. Like, this is a person, you know? This is a little girl that I know who lives across the street from me. I know her family, you know?
And not only that, like, how was he not scared of, like...
Yeah, like, why would you think that is, like, the lesser evil?
Yeah, of your dad catching you, like, with the little girl that she's crying because you hit her in the face versus... You know, I dragged her into my waterbed.
And maybe that's just how much he feared
his dad,
you know, damn, like, this is what I have to do. Like, anything is better than having to deal with my dad's wrath. And maybe it was just one of those things where he was like, this has gone too far. Like, I can't go back now. I have to fucking commit. And that is also not excusable, you know?
No. Anyways, that was a short one, but it was a little TikTok one that I found. So I was like, that's interesting.
That's a tough cookie.
It was what got me. It was like two kids. Their and age. The fact that homeboy had a waterbed. I haven't seen a waterbed in, I guess it was the 90s, right?
Waterbeds? Were they like popping in the 90s?
I don't know.
But...
I fucked a guy on a waterbed once.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
I'm very excited for your story.
I'm very excited for my story. I was kind of, okay, so again, I have a history of on this podcast. My stories are very depressing. Oftentimes, like, there's really no good ending. There's really no hope that you can find from a lot of the stories that I tell. So I kind of wanted to switch that up. I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of putting our audience through this. You know, new year, new me. Not that we haven't been recording this podcast
for fucking months.
But so today I'm going to tell you about the public lynching of Aku Yadav.
Is this in America?
I was going to say, I hope I'm saying that correctly, but I hope I'm not, because fuck you.
Oh. Yeah. Was this like citizens arrest sort of vibe?
Better. Okay.
I like it.
So, for years, the city of Nagar, India has been plagued with violence, robbery, extortion, gang violence, and of course, sexual crimes against women.
Oh.
So it's plagued by poverty. It's a really, really poor city, and many of the citizens live in slums.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that live here are oftentimes kind of like the scourge of society, you know, like the people that nobody wants anything to do with. Mm-hmm. You know, they're uneducated. They struggle to find work. And of course you need an education that's going to, you know, kind of elevate you
right.
to be able to leave the slum. But education costs money, which they don't have. And so it's kind of just like a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It's just a vicious cycle of just poverty. And so these circumstances have all made it really easy for violence to thrive in these mm-hmm. communities, you know, because the people that live here are often not really all that protected. You know, police right. don't really care what happens to them. And a lot of the times it's kind of they're perpetuating the violence against each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
just trying to really move up at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, this made it really easy for violence to thrive, and especially violence against women. You know, a lot of the times women of color are the most vulnerable
yeah.
in society. And so
I feel like I've read a lot of articles too where like, or don't they like have, is that in you said India, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where like they have like a lot of like the honor killings?
That I think that's more in, like, Middle Eastern countries.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It also doesn't help that the police force in this city is also very corrupt.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it just created the perfect circumstances for, you know, a breeding ground for somebody like Aku Yadav
mm-hmm.
to thrive. So he was born in the slum in Agar, and he turned to a life of crime pretty early. So he joined a gang at a really young age, and this gang would terrorize the community that they mm-hmm. lived in. And they would, you know, rob homes, they would steal, and they eventually graduated to more violent crimes like kidnap, torture, rape, murder. So eventually he assembled his own gang. So he just rounded up a bunch of men who lived in this slum, and they became their own gang. And this granted him immense power because he pretty much eventually became like the top, like
head honcho.
Yeah, like the head honcho. Like he ruled this place. And that allowed him to have a lot of influence and a lot of, you know, he was able to commit these crimes without really fearing persecution, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to bribe police officers. He'd give them beer, well, not beer, but alcohol. He would give them alcohol and money. And in exchange, they would pretty much turn a blind eye to all
Are
of his
serious?
Crimes.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Imagine being that desperate for, like, money or, like...
Alcohol, dude.
Alcohol.
Yeah. And so, in a lot of cases, they would flat out refuse to arrest him whenever people would go and commit crimes. Like, would go and report crimes that he had committed against mm-hmm. them. They would refuse to arrest him. And so, because murder was harder to cover up, he began using rape to enforce his terror on the slum. Which, let me stop now. I forgot to say the trigger warning at the beginning. If you are really sensitive to the topic of rape, if you kind of get really, 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 like, affected by that, I would recommend to stop listening now because there's a lot of talk about that. So, rape is really stigmatized in Indian culture. You know, a lot of the women wouldn't even try to report their attacks because they were just so ashamed that that happened to them, you know. And a lot of times in this culture, the blame is shifted onto the woman,
right.
you know.
Like,
what did you do?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you do that that happened to you? What, and you know, a lot of the fault is placed on women, and you know, a lot of women place that blame on themselves, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they choose to not really report their crime. So this, coupled with the fact that if any woman did decide to report their crime to police, they would alert Aku, who would then return to the woman's home and threaten to kill their families or throw acid on them or rape them
Are
again.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So a lot of the women were just silent. They stopped reporting their attacks completely. And in the span of a decade, he raped as many as 40 women, the youngest of which was just 10 years old.
Why?
Because he's fucking evil, dude. He's the devil. So this tactic wasn't only used to control women, but also to humiliate the men that lived in the area, you know, because the idea is that, you know, men are supposed to protect their wives, their daughters,
oh,
you know,
God.
That's kind of where their honor lies of like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've protected my family. And so they would literally just go into homes and just drag the women out onto the street, you know, girls as young as 12 years old, just pulling them out of their houses and assaulting them in the street in front of their fathers, in front of their husbands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really big shame for the men as well, you know, because they knew that they were pretty much helpless to protect their family. So one of the, they would even attack pregnant women.
Why? Like, it's just evil. So unnecessary. Like,
they're evil. And I'm gonna like spare you a lot of the
right, please,
of the details, because like the stuff that him and his gang would do is just vile, dude. Fucking vile. And not all of the crimes were committed against women. A lot of them were committed against men who would try to stand up to them, you know, and try to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a lose-lose situation. You know, mm-hmm. If you don't try to defend your family, you know, they come in and they get attacked. If you do try to protect your family, they attack you and they attack your, you know,
your family,
your
as well.
Daughters, your yeah. whatever, you know. So one of the most heartbreaking cases was the rape of a woman named Kalma. And she was assaulted by Aku only 10 days after she had given birth. And after the attack, she doused herself in kerosene and lit herself on fire, committing suicide.
Her baby was not, like, not even fucking a month old?
No, it was, like, days later after the attack. So her baby was maybe a few weeks, most. Yeah, because she was just so ashamed about what happened to her.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Because it was, like, in public view, you know?
Oh, no.
So she was just, like, so ashamed. And then I'm sure that it was probably, you know, a lot of it, too, is, like, you know, she just had a baby, you know? Yeah. So, like, I'm
There's
sure her body was
on.
Just, like, already, you know? So that was, when I read that, dude, that was, like, everything that I was just reading about this man just made me hate him.
Yeah, he sounds like a real
so
piece of
much.
Shit. Yeah.
So everybody who lived in the slum was pretty much helpless to do anything. The police wouldn't help them. There was nobody looking out for them. You know, there was dozens of reports made. He was arrested 14 times, but nothing ever came of it because they would just let him go because he would bribe them. So he was pretty much untouchable. And when the woman would confront him about his attacks, you know, a few of them would try to, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why are you doing this? He would blame it on their loose character.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How fucking, what a piece of shit.
He's the worst, dude. The absolute worst. He's a fucking monster.
Oh my god.
And it was said, the people that lived in the slum said that there was a rape victim in every house.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, as infuriating as this story is, there is a reckoning.
Please.
So, the reckoning has a name. Her name is Usha.
It's a woman!
Yes, bitch. Usha Narayan, I hope I'm saying that correctly. She lived in the same slum as Aku, and she happened to be very educated, actually. And she was very outspoken about his attacks against women in the area, and she was very vocal about police's lack of action. And she wasn't afraid of him. She wasn't afraid of him. She wasn't afraid of the police. And she was constantly just going around talking shit.
Really?
Yeah. And so Aku actually visited her home a few times, and he warned her to quit speaking out against him, or he would rape her too, or throw acid on her, or kill her family, you know, like all of his usual threats. But none of them worked, because her brother was actually a lawyer, and he had also been outspoken about Aku, and together they bypassed police, and they went straight to the deputy commissioner, and he swore that Aku would answer for his crimes. So I felt like a quote that, like, pretty well encompasses, like, just how little she fucking gave a fuck about this, like, situation.
Mm-hmm.
She said, he raped only poor people whom he thought wouldn't go and tell, or if they did, wouldn't be listened to. But he made a big mistake in threatening me.
Oh, that's powerful.
So Aku found out about the report that she had made, and he became enraged. He was fucking pissed, because he was like, who is this bitch think she is? You know, mm-hmm. like, I rule this place.
Mm-hmm.
So he and 40 gang members surrounded.
How big was his gang?
It didn't say, but
no. I mean, 40.
Pretty significant, yeah. You know, that he was able to spare 40 people. And they surrounded Usha's house. Aku held a bottle of acid and said that he intended to use it on her, but told her she wouldn't be harmed if she withdrew her complaint. So she barricaded herself inside of her home, and she called police, but they never came. And it was pretty much just her alone against 40 fucking men surrounding her house, banging on her door, trying to get inside. So she refused to open the door, and they became even more agitated. And Aku began yelling at her, telling her all of these threats, saying that he would douse her in acid, whatever. And his other gang members continued to try to break down the door. But Usha yelled back insults of her own. She was talking all kinds of shit to him. And
imagine how infuriating that was for, like, a man. Also, like, that's like, that is the fact that he has to bring 40 fucking men to confront a little girl.
Shows how small he is.
Yeah, shows how what a piece of shit he is.
Mm-hmm. So what Usha does is that she turns on the gas tank that her family kept for cooking,
mm-hmm.
and she let the house fill up with gas, and she told them that if anybody came inside the house, she would light the match and blow all of them up. And they smelled the gas, and then they just backed off. they're like, nah, man, I'm not trying to fucking get blown up, you know, over this bitch.
Damn.
So people heard of this event, and they heard about how Usha stand up. She stood up to them, you know, mm-hmm. and she said that I'm not fucking scared of you. I don't care. Like, I'd rather die than let you get the best of me, you know? Yeah. So this kind of inspired other people to take matters into their own hands. And people in the slum began attacking any known associate of Aku, and the gang members began hiding. A mob of dozens of people showed up to his house and smashed it down to rubble and then set it on fire.
Damn.
Yeah. So Aku actually eventually turned himself into the police for his own protection, fearing that people would kill him if they found him, which they would. That was their plan. So he was taken into custody on August 7th, 2004, and he was set to appear in court that same day. And over 500 people gathered in the streets to see him in custody. Some of the people in attendance were also his fellow gang members, one of which, like, they snuck him a knife whenever the police weren't looking. And one of the women saw that, and she told police, you know, like, they just gave him a knife. And she's like, starts freaking out. And they obviously, like, they take it from him. And Aku told the women in the crowd that he would return to the slum and teach every single one of them a lesson.
Oh, what a fucking bitch.
Yep. But the women were never, ever going to allow him to hurt them again. So 5 days later, there was a bail hearing planned for Aku where he would be set to be released. So needless to say, the women that he had harmed were fucking outraged. They were like, no, we're not going to let this happen. Mm-hmm. So a group of over 200 women armed with knives and chili powder descended.
Not the chili powder.
Yes, bitch, the chili powder, which they're from India, so that shit got to be potent. Mm-hmm. So they descended on the courthouse where he was being held, and they filled up the courtroom where he was going to be set to appear.
Imagine, like, what a fucking movement that was.
Yeah, dude. Like, I know, they were riled up, dude. So whenever he walked in, he saw the face of one of the women that he had raped, and he laughed at her and called her a prostitute. The police officers in the room laughed.
Really?
Yeah. So the woman took off her shoe, and she began beating him. And she said, "We can't both live on this earth together. It's you or me."
Dang.
Yeah. So this was pretty much like the rallying cry for all of the other women who had been waiting for this moment. And 200 women all began attacking him. They just started stabbing him, beating him. They threw chili powder in the faces of the guards who tried to intervene. And he was stabbed over 70 times. And one of his victims hacked off his penis with a vegetable knife.
Oh my God, like a goddamn butter knife or what?
No, like a little vegetable knife. The little ones. She hacked that shit off. And as he was being attacked, he screamed, "Forgive me, I won't do it again." So the women continued passing around knives as he screamed, and they would each take turns stabbing him.
Oh, fun.
And they promised that every victim would get to stab him at least once. So within 15 minutes after the attack began, he was dead on the marble floor of the courtroom. And Usha said, "It was not calculated. It was not a case that we all sat down and calmly planned what would happen. It was an emotional outburst. The woman decided that if necessary, they'd go to prison, but this man would never come back and terrorize them."
Amen.
So the women all returned to their homes, and they told everybody what happened. They told their husbands, their brothers, that he was finally gone, and the people played music, and they danced in the street, and they even purchased food and fruit to pass around to friends in celebration. So law enforcement obviously had to find somebody to answer for the attack, and they were already looking for people responsible for the lynching, and the first woman that they arrested was Usha.
Of course.
And they arrested four other women, and whenever they took these women to the courthouse, more than 400 men, women, and children gathered in front of the courthouse where they were being held and said that they would not move until the women were granted bail, which they were. And every woman later on, you know, like whenever mm-hmm. they were doing the court process and all of that, every woman who lived in the slum claimed responsibility for the murder, saying that it could not be blamed on just one woman. And if they wanted to arrest those responsible, they would have to arrest them all.
Wow.
So in 2012, Usha and 20 other women were all acquitted of the murder due to lack of evidence. And in 2014, anyone that was being held on charges related to the case were all released due to a lack of evidence as well. So no one has ever been tried or convicted for his murder.
Good. You know what's bullshit? They're all free. It's such shit because they're like, we must find someone responsible. And I'm like, knowing willingly that this man was like,
had the police in his pocket.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden y'all got work to do.
Right. That's infuriating. I know. I'm so glad they all stuck to each other. Like, that's fucking powerful. And that's so just powerful. Show a lot of people, like, there's power in numbers.
Exactly. And not only that, dude, but like, this story just made me feel so vindicated that like these women were just, they had fucking enough, dude. Mm-hmm. They were just like, nobody's gonna protect us. The police aren't gonna help us. Nobody is gonna look out for us. So we have to make sure that this man is never gonna fucking come back and hurt us. And so they took matters into their own hands and they fucking got rid of him, dude. And good fucking riddance. Burn in hell.
Yeah, no shit.
I know. So satisfying. That's why I was like, ugh. I feel good about. I mean, I feel devastated that these women had to go through what they went through, right. But I'm also like, justice was served. I feel like this is. I don't know. I feel like this is like
nothing went down in vain.
I feel like this is the perfect way for him to have like
of course. Met his end. Oh my god! Of course. Truly. Imagine how like comforting it was. Like obviously not stabbing a man, but like
they just felt empowered.
To take a little bit of him, like they had taken from them,
and that's the thing that like they said that every one of his victims got to stab him at least once. Like they all got to have that moment. It's heartwarming.
Yeah, no kidding.
That they all got to stab their rapist to death. Honestly, that's how I think every rapist should go out. Honestly,
why not?
Truly,
eye for an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Literally,
but
toothpick his eye out,
dude. For real, make him eat it. Sorry, too much. Okay. But yeah, that's my story, dude. I was really, I felt like every story that I've covered so far has just been like so depressing, like just no resolution, just makes you feel like shit. But I feel like this one, I know that there's still men out there who perpetuate crimes like this against women, and it's never going to really end. Yeah. I feel like as long as humanity is here, there will be men who are violent towards women. But I'm glad that these women were able to take their power back. Right. And I feel like for so long that they lived for years. Like, he was at this shit for over a decade.
That's
and
horrible.
He took so much from so many people. And they were able to take their power back. And that's so powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's a great note to end off on.
I think so, too. Yeah. I'm very happy about it. So, you know, for those of you listening, thank you for sticking around.
Yeah.
You know, thank
we'll
you
be back
for...
in another like month or so.
Yeah, we'll see Norma's when we
going
see
on vacation.
You. I am. I'm so excited. Sorry, not sorry. Heck yeah, I'm going. I'm not gonna say where I'm going because you know
you
I
might
just
get
wanna,
a
I just want to live. I just want to be normal for a little while.
Anyways, so I do want to say something. Jenny in high school, Jenny would master. She's like one of those girls that would meow, and her meow got so fucking
so good,
authentic. Do you still got the meow?
I don't know. I haven't done it in a while.
Do it.
And with that note, we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.